Hello, I'm Peter Ayers, and you're listening to Stages, the podcast that converses...
The reality of that 8-show a week slog is really hard.
When I start on a character, I have to draw them, and I'm not an artist.
This is, in effect, built in myth and mystery. So you'd be sitting in this tiny little bio box with radiators all around you.
Which was a funny thing, because I don't think that play would have happened in that way if it wasn't at Griffin.
You're a bit different to the other girls in this area.
Yes, I thought, yes, I am.
That was the days when they could smell an actor or a singer and think, oh, I've got 6 weeks.
My sisters really taught me that I had to be versatile.
This ostrich, pink ostrich feather sticking up out of my hair, out of this wig.
My first career, as it were, was preparation for my second career.
And her face was beaming. It was just beaming at me.
I hadn't lost any of my passion or love for it, so it's been a joy to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Matt Gilbertson grew up in Adelaide, absorbing all variety of popular culture. His musical influences range from Kylie Minogue and Madonna to the study of classical piano and mastery of the piano accordion. A diet of comic personas delivered via Ab Fab, Full Frontal and Fast Forward also made their mark, along with vivid live performances such as The Boy from Oz and the antics of Master Clown Bob Down. It's not surprising then that Matt would create a comic persona that, like Gunston, Everidge and Down, would enter the canon of larrikin characters birthed Down Under. Matt Gilbertson is the alter ego of international superstar, sex symbol, accordionist, homewrecker, Madonna fan, Hans the German. The flamboyant and irresistible Hans has made a splash on the domestic scene and globally as the single Australian to have appeared on America's Got Talent. Award-winning comedy cabaret engagements around the world and quite literally a splash on a ship in 2022. That could have fared much worse for Hans and indeed Matt. They've been touring Australia in recent months with House of Hans, Disco Spectacular, and are set for an exciting 2024. To tell all and a bit more, Matt joins the Stages podcast from his home in Adelaide via the Zoom platform. And just a heads up, the connection was unstable at times, but please do bear with us. I'll press record. You'll probably have an acceptance there.
Got it. Yep.
Got it. I've just got a ring light and
they're great.
They are great, but I'm breaking out in a sweat.
Oh yeah, they're warm. They're only for 15 minute situations.
Oh, we're going to talk a lot longer than that.
Yes, exactly. Well, if you need to, you know, pat down the Whitney Houston, just the
I feel like I should have sunscreen on.
Actually, we have been out in the sun and I'm just looking and I'm a bit burnt.
Well, you're lucky you've got a lovely pool that you can go and lay beside.
I'm going to, exactly. But it's like the first week of it's going to be warm the whole week. So, you know.
I suppose you've been, to use a pun, lapping up the pool because... you've been clocking up the frequent flyer miles with a tour with your alter ego, Hans.
That's why I'm excited. Correct. Oh, we started now. Yes.
Yes, of course we've started. yes, podcasts are supposed to be real and authentic. So, you know, that's page number one in the podcast playbook.
Well, what would I know about either of those things?
well, Matt Gilbertson, international cabaret superstar. You do a lot of television chat, of course. Have you done many podcasts?
I have done a few of them, but I don't really do a lot as me. And I feel much more nervous talking to you without a German accent than with one. I think it's actually a lot easier to be covered head to toe in glitter, I think.
Well, that's the actor's mask, isn't it?
For me, at least.
The actor's mask, you get to hide behind a character. So things are a little easier.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So this is a weird situation for me, but I feel like you'll be gentle.
I'll be very gentle with you, Matt. Yes, absolutely. I feel honoured that I'm talking to Matt, actually.
Thank God.
I did get to see Hans recently on tour in Ballarat, which was sensational.
In good old Ballarat. Well, it was, yes, Wendery. But it was a fun night. I mean, it was, I think it was our last show of about 4 weeks worth of shows. So he was seeing us right at the end, which we were, you know, very excited about. But it was, yeah, it was a fun night. And I got to meet your lovely family.
You did. You did indeed. And they adored meeting you and had lots of photographs. And my mother even, what was the advice my mother gave you?
What did she say? Oh, well, it was the start of daylight savings. So as we were living, she's like, now don't forget, change your clock tonight. And I was like, very good point. I hadn't actually thought about it up until then.
She's camp. I dread these 6 months because every time I call, there's some complaint about, you know, it's not dark enough yet or the curtains are going to fade or whatever.
She wants it. She needs to get into the nightclubs early, doesn't she? That's yeah. That's her situation. She's like, come on, get rid of this sun.
So, Matt, describe your perfect day off, because that tour was quite intensive and, you know, you give 120% in that show. How do you like to relax when you're not on stage?
Well, you know what? My perfect day off is pretty much like it is today. It's a lovely, gorgeous, sunny day. I'm home. I'm in Adelaide. I'm at my house. I'm by myself. There's no one annoying me apart from you. But, you know, that's okay. That's all right. This is my perfect day off. Talking about myself.
That's what I agree with that. Marilyn Monroe once said that she restores herself by being alone.
100%. Oh, my gosh. Especially, you know, in if it's a fringe festival or something like that where you're on every night, I would quite happily do the show and pretty much not talk to anybody apart from that hour. You know, I don't go out after the show. You very rarely see me in the fringe club afterwards. I'm so exhausted after that sort of performance because, you know, it is quite high energy and just even mental capacity. I'm kind of thinking about everything as it's going and everything's ticking over 100 miles an hour. Then after that, to be, yeah, just by myself and just to chill out. I do like to watch a lot of trash TV. I'll say that. The Real, yeah, anything with Real and Housewives in it, that's me.
So there is a wind down process. You don't go home and straight to bed.
No, I can't go straight to sleep. And that's, you know, especially when you're on tour and then you've got to be up the next day early to get to the next town or whatever. You've got to be up at 7:30, 8 o'clock. It is a bit annoying because sometimes I find I can't fall asleep till about 1. And I'm definitely somebody that needs a good 8 hours. Otherwise, I can be a real bitch, which I know would be difficult for you to imagine, Peter.
Very difficult, yes. I've only seen the nice match.
Yeah. So Correct. That's all anybody sees.
Let's talk about the persona that you inhabit on those tours and in those performances. Hans. Does Hans have a surname?
He did at the beginning, which was, just because I thought it sounded German, Hans Brockenheimen. But I kind of got rid of that. And now I feel like you can't call yourself an international superstar and have a surname. I mean, look, Cher, Madonna, Jesus. I mean, they've all, you know, it's a one-word person, I think. So, yeah. Plus, I always liked, I don't know, I always liked shorter names, you know, one syllable, two at a max. So Hans was kind of it from the beginning.
Well, Hans is described as an international superstar, sex symbol, accordionist, home wrecker, Madonna fan. That's quite a jumble of attributes.
He's all the things that I'm not, apart from an accordionist. We both have that in common. Oh, and probably the home wrecker thing. But that's a separate podcast. I can't really talk about that too much right now. Yeah, I think the thing with Hans was, I also like that, I always find in people that have the longest job titles usually do the least amount of work. I always thought that was something that I found just in life. So I thought it was funny to give him, you know, I always imagine what his email signature would be and just have all of these things listed off, you know. The only thing that's missing is, you know, OAM. But would they give that to a German? I'm not sure.
Well, you know, give it time.
Let's find out. Yeah.
Look, I must say he is the most enduring clown, and in a long line of great clowns that Australia has produced, like Norman Gunston and Artie Jack. Bert and Don on television, Dame Edna. There's a great sort of influence you can see from all of those. Were they great idols of yours growing up?
I think, yes, obviously, all of those names you mentioned. Norman Gunston. I think Norman Gunston I kind of discovered later in life, and that was more from a media point of view, because when I first started doing Hans, I also started working on radio here as Hans as well. So I kind of liked the interviews that Norman Gunston would do, and I only really started like looking at them later on. But growing up, my mum and my grandma would take me to see Bob Down all the time, every year. And I do remember thinking early on, why do they want me to see this? Now it kind of makes sense, let's be honest. And yeah, I actually dressed as Bob Down at my 21st birthday. Blue fiery suit, blonde wig, and yeah, I loved him. And now, of course, Mark and I are good friends. And he jokes that he's left me all of his jokes in his will. He just wasn't expecting me to use them before he was dead.
What a great line. He must be chuffed that somehow Bob birthed or gave some DNA to Hans.
Well, I think somewhere along the line we are probably related, you know, distant cousins or something. I mean, Hans Down. It makes sense, doesn't it? You're Absolutely. Looking for a surname. Maybe that was actually it.
There's a great sense of comfort and safety watching Hans perform, because he's taking the piss out of himself. He's laughing at himself as he gently prods the audience.
I hope so. That's the thing that and that took a long time for me to realise. I remember when the very, very early days, you know, some people would be like, oh, don't be too mean. And I think the meanness got taken out of it by taking the joke, you know, putting the joke on myself first. I mean, if I'm saying, criticizing somebody's outfit, for example, or whatever it is, but I'm there dressed in, you know, a little hot pants, who's the joke really on at the end of the day? But I think that's obviously, it's a very Australian thing. You know, we all, you know, take the mickey out of ourselves quite readily. And so I think the audience is already willing to go along for the ride. But yeah, I definitely think my number one aim is to make fun of myself first.
Star Trek groupies have a name, the Trekkies, and I think Jekyll and Hyde groupies had the Jekylls or the Jekkies. Do Hans groupies have a name?
Well, you know, my dancers are called the Lucky Bitches, which there's a story about that. My band is called the Ungrateful Bastards. But the people that come to the show, there are a few of them. We call them the Hansi Army. And just like cricket supporters, they are, you know, tasteless, basically, Peter. I'll say that. But they really put it, there are people that dress up and they put a lot of effort into their costumes. And, you know, I mean, it's like a Steggles factory sometimes at the show. It's just feathers everywhere.
Scripting your act, I mean, it feels very improvised and of the moment. But you obviously have a structure that you build the show on.
I think the structure mostly comes from the songs. And then, you know, a lot of it is whatever is happening in the news that week or things we've seen in wherever we are performing, you know, whatever town. And then a lot of it, yeah, is depending on who's there in the audience. Obviously, there are, you know, I have like a bit of a toolbox where I've got go-to lines and go-to scenarios for different people. But I mean, before the show, I'm obviously quite nervous, not just from a pre-show, you know, that I don't actually know what's going to happen until I'm out there in the show. And so structure-wise, I usually do give myself two songs back-to-back right at the start. And mostly in that time, I'm kind of scanning the audience and working out who's kind of going to be up for it, who's going to play along, who's going to play along, but also not too much because you don't want people to take over and kind of annoy people. Yeah, but that's something that has been honed over the years. A lot of it is obviously me, you know, rattling off the lines and everything, but a lot of the show is also me watching people and just observing and working out what's going to happen next.
I imagine a lot of that those skills were garnered in an apprenticeship that you did in theatre restaurant. I mean, once you discovered busking and then you started working in a theatre restaurant?
But this place was called the Weimar Room, and it was a pop-up venue that they used for a fringe season and kept the venue going. And then every Friday night, they did this show called Berlin Cabaret, which was set in kind of, you know, 1930s, 1940s, Berlin. Everybody had a costume. Everybody had a German character. And it was kind of, you know, it was a lot of Spolanski songs, Marlene Dietrich, Hollander, you know, that sort of material, and like a couple of 1930s American songs in there as well. And my job initially was playing accordion in the interval of this show. So one of the performers had seen me busking in the mall, and I'd only just taught myself to play accordion that Christmas holidays. I'd just finished school. And there's almost 6 months between the end of year 12 and the start of university. So I taught myself to play accordion in that time. And I just kind of taught myself playing pop songs. And I would go busking in the mall or the central markets here in Adelaide. And I do remember the night that I met Catherine, who put me into this show. I was playing, Peter, you'll appreciate this, Communards, Don't Leave Me This Way, was the song that started Hans. And but you know what? During busking is also when it was a lot of people watching during that time as well. And I would kind of watch people walk past and work out different scenarios for them in my head and, you know, make up little stories for them. I think a lot of that sort of stuff had its early roots in busking. Yeah, I loved it. I loved doing the busking back then. Now I don't know if you could do it as much because, you know, everybody's like the queen. Nobody carries cash anymore.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Everyone needs a tap and go, don't they?
Everyone needs a tap and go. But I feel like that's, you know, the joy of busking was you just chuck whatever was in your pocket. Tap and go seems a bit fiddly. I don't know. I feel like it's killing the busking scene, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Let's rewind to the accordion. I mean, I don't think you just teach yourself the accordion over summer. I mean, you had trained as a classical pianist, hadn't you?
That's correct. I'd done the whole AMEB, you know, cult or whatever you want to call it. And so I grew up doing classical piano. I did the diploma. The school I went to in Adelaide was Marrickville, so it was a special music school as well. So we would do double music lessons and everything else. So, yeah, I had a very strong classical background. So, yeah, it wasn't like I just picked up an accordion, you know, willy-nilly. But also, you know, I was studying classical piano, but my way of having fun was playing pop music. So I famously would bust out an ABBA piece halfway through, you know, a piano lesson. And my teacher was always furious with me and, you know, get back and play Mozart. And somehow I would like work in Dancing Queen into that or whatever. But yeah, so that's why when I started playing the accordion, those were the kind of songs that I just gravitated to organically.
So accessing all that music growing up, was it a musical household and was there lots of eclectic styles being played by the family?
No, you know what? My dad works as a plumber. He still does. My mum actually grew up, she played basketball for Australia. So it was, nobody played, you know, there were no musicians in my family, but my mum and dad would listen to My dad like loved Led Zeppelin and Midnight Oil and that kind of music. Mum and dad always listened to Triple J growing up. So it was almost like they were the kind of cool parents. But my way of rebelling against that was by listening to really, really cheesy pop. Spice Girls, Kylie Minogue, Madonna. That was kind of, I think, yeah, my way. Normally it's the other way around. You know, normally the parents are listening to pop music and the kids bang on Triple J to, you know, put up a bit of, you know, whatever was going on, Silverchair or whatever. The first concert, pop music or, you know, rock music concert I ever went to was A Big Day Out. And it was the year that Courtney Love and Marilyn Manson were headlining. So that paints the picture of what kind of era we're talking about. And I remember the night before being at dance class and my teacher, Miss Linda, saying to me, well, have fun at your druggy concert tomorrow. And me just thinking, what is she talking about? And then the next day finding out what she was talking about. But my dad took me along to this show. And I remember saying to him, okay, I'll meet you at this hot dog stand after Courtney Love. And of course, by the time Courtney Love had finished, they'd taken down the hot dog stand. And I thought, oh my God, I'm never going to meet my dad again. This is it. I now live at the Big Day Out. So that is the kind of music I grew up in. But like I said, I remember we would go to see Bob Dow. We would go to see some fringe shows. I remember getting taken to a lot of musicals growing up. I remember seeing Hello Dolly when Jill Perryman was Hello Dolly. I remember the original Boy from Oz being taken to that, I think about four times. I remember it was one Christmas and I think three or four different people gave me tickets to the Todd McKenna Hugh, you know, Boy from Oz version. Again, now it makes sense. I'm like, oh yes, these people were seeing something that I hadn't worked out at that point. But I loved it. I just was like, I remember there was that one part at the end of Act One where he came out, he did a really quick change and then he came out in that glitter bomber jacket, and then all the mirror balls went off at once, and I was like, oh, that was a moment.
You've obviously been a sponge, and you've absorbed every experience that you've had.
Yeah, I think so. I think also I just loved pop culture growing up. I loved kind of, you know, I loved like Fast Forward, and I loved like Full Frontal, those sort of shows that kind of made fun of whatever was happening at the time. A lot of the, you know, some of them I was too young to even get the references, but I thought they were funny jokes. I loved, you remember Mark Downey used to do the SBS woman?
Yeah.
I thought that was the funniest thing I had ever seen. I still do think it's one of the funniest characters ever. But I used to love that. I used to love like Ab Fab, which again, you know, you watch it now and there are so many references of the early 90s and of the time that, and I think a lot of that has informed what I do now.
Yeah, absolutely. Great comic actors inhabiting a range of, you know, very broad heightened characters.
Right. Yeah.
Dance class also growing up, it sounds like you were.
Yes.
You did. Yeah.
Tap and jazz. I loved it. And you know what? I loved the most about going to dance class is obviously when you're studying piano, you have to be very self-disciplined. And it's, you know, hours and hours and hours. Dance class was like, great. Finally, I'm around other people and I had my friends there. And also, let's be honest, back in the day, if you were dancing then as a boy, I think I was one of two boys in the whole dance school. Now it's very different, thank God. But, you know, we were like, oh my gosh, unicorns back then. Well, still are. But, you know, being the only boy meant, okay, front row, center, you're the star of the performance. Everybody's dancing around you, which obviously I did not hate, Peter. Again, another shocking revelation.
It's a good thing you were good.
Well, I actually don't know if I was that good. I think I was just tall.
That helps.
And you smile a lot. That's fine.
I know, smile and the audience will forgive you anything, won't they?
100%. I think, you know, when people say, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received? That is my one. If you make a mistake, smile harder.
Working in that Weimar cabaret lounge, you were great. You were blooded, really, because you're working with drunks also, which you have to have that quick fire repartee to fire back at some of the comments that they would come out with, I imagine.
Yeah, well, you know, the show, again, it was very light on script. We had a very loose structure, and you know, so the show itself was kind of that sort of cabaret. But my part was even looser because I was, again, it started off just being in the interval of the show. So I would just kind of go up to people's tables and talk to them and perform, you know, whatever song they wanted to hear on the night. And then kind of that part of the show evolved into a little bit more like, has it stopped again?
No, could you see my face? There was a little bit of a glitch and I grimaced, yes. but we're back again.
The interval part of the show almost became like a little show within the show, like a little bit of a halftime entertainment part. And then it kind of expanded from there. And then Hans kind of, eventually the Weimar Room shut down, but I just kind of kept doing the character at different venues. I got another job at another bar in town. And then again, that's when around about this time is when I started working at Nova. And they got me on there initially to talk about Schützenfest or something German. But I think the morning they had me on, it was on the breakfast show, and I started mouthing off about celebrities and, you know, whoever was in the news at the time. So Nova were looking for somebody to do celebrity gossip on the breakfast show then. And so they got me in a few times a week, and then eventually I was on every morning. And it was around the time, topical at the moment, I remember when I got that job, it was the week that Britney Spears shaved her head. So you remember, it was kind of a time where celebrity gossip exploded. You know, it was like Britney Spears and Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan. It was kind of that era. And there was, let's just say, if you were doing a comedy character, doing celebrity gossip, there was a lot of material daily. So it was kind of easy. And it was almost like I worked out that really you didn't have to make up too many jokes because the jokes were already there. All you had to do was say what you saw.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is passed on now. I mean, you know, even the things that I kind of poke fun at the moment in the show, there's not a lot of effort you have to put in. I will say, oh my gosh, this woman with the mushrooms, she's been a godsend.
You've milked that, have you?
I don't know if everybody's laughing about it, but you know, you just have to mention the word mushroom and the audience starts cackling away. So yeah, she's been good.
Well, comedy can be very cathartic, can't it? It can help us to deal with those severe situations.
I think so. And I've found that a lot with dealing with whatever's going on in my life as well, you know? I mean, I had a very traumatic event last year. You know, it could have really been much worse than it was, but to the show, finding the funny parts of it. And that, for me, has helped me process the situation as well. So, yeah, I think my show, and I say it in the show, it's not meant to be anything intellectual. You'll probably leave the show dumber than the way you came in, but it's a way of escaping reality. And I think that's really important these days. I mean, everything globally, news is awful. Domestically, the news is awful. Nobody can afford to put the electricity on. And this can, you know, circle around in your head over and over and over. Sometimes you just need to switch off and have a laugh. And I think that's probably even more important sometimes.
Seeing as you broached the subject, yes, you did have a very traumatic episode last year in falling off the stage. And we all expressed much concern and sent healing vibes across the ocean to the UK where you were recovering. But talk us through that. I mean, it must have been frightening to, first of all, to have had that event happen in, you were in Turkey, weren't you?
So I was on a ship. We just left Bodrum, Turkey. And I was performing, we were almost towards the end of the show. And the plan was in the last song of the show, there were lifts on the stage that, you know, moved the performers up and down. And we had some dancers in the show. And the final song was meant to be Proud Mary. And the plan was that in the fast bit of Proud Mary, the dancers would shoot up on these lifts. Somehow the lift was lowered a song early, so in the second to last song. And I'm in and out of the audience a lot in my show. And I came up the stairs and the lift was down. I didn't have time to see it. And I ended up falling. It was 13 feet, so just under 4 meters. And I remember, first of all, I remember everything about it happening. So the fall itself, it felt like it took 5 minutes to hit the ground. You know, it was this kind of, oh my gosh, this is happening. This is about to happen. All of that happened all within the space of, it would have been 2 seconds. But it, in my mind, I could process it all going on. And my initial reaction, because when you're in the show, all you're thinking about is the show. My first instinct was to try to get back on stage because I was just thinking about the show, you know, and I was more worried about the audience seeing it and what they were going to think, and I didn't want them to be worried or anything. The band kept playing when it had happened. So, I mean, you know, I mean, you've been to one of my shows, there's so much random stuff happening that I'm sure the audience probably thought it was part of the show and like that I was going to spring up at the back of the theater like David Copperfield or something. But I think then what had happened is the band stopped and there was a, you know, like the alpha over the PA, and then it kind of, things got pretty serious from there. So I pretty much worked out quickly that no, I was not going to be going back on stage. I knew I'd done something to my foot and I knew my back was sore. I didn't know what any of that meant at that point. So I got taken up to the medical center and there were a lot of people in the room. I think there were four doctors in the audience on the night it happened. So they all rushed in, the ship's medical team was there. And I just remember actually feeling quite calm when that had happened. I thought, there's nothing I can do. I just have to go with whatever's about to happen to me. People here know what they're doing. Let's just, you know, surrender and go with it. But then I worked out that it was a bit more serious than I had initially thought when they said, oh no, we're turning the ship back to go back to Bodrum and we're going to drop you to hospital there. Because I know that these ships, once they've left the port, they're not going back. You know, there's port fees and there's this and there's, you know, so once they said, oh, we're turning the ship back, I thought, okay, this is probably a little more full on than I realized. So they ended up going to Bodrum, back to Bodrum. And there was an ambulance waiting for me on the dock and I got taken off the ship. There's quite a very sweet video of all the passengers in their balcony applauding me as I'm going off the ship. And we went to this hospital in Turkey. Things got a little dramatic from there. I can't recommend the Turkish healthcare system, just in case you're trying to give it a turn. No, it's not on my number one suggestion list, but I was really, really lucky because I had a friend traveling with me on this trip, and he's actually an associate professor of nursing here in Adelaide. So he was picking up on things that I wouldn't know, you know, at the hospital. But he was definitely working out. He's thinking, why haven't they done this sort of scan? Why haven't they done that? And then he was sending the x-rays and the CT, you know, scans from Turkey back to doctors here in Australia. And they were giving a lot of advice, which was really helpful. So eventually I got to London and they did the big surgery there. But yeah, it was pretty traumatic. And I would say that a lot of the trauma was associated with the week after the event, more so than the actual accident itself. It was everything that kind of transpired from there. Yeah, and I just remember, I mean, for the first week, I didn't know if I was going to walk again, so...
Yes, yeah. Quite an event. And I'm just picturing you being arriving at casualty in that Turkish hospital, all glitter and sparkles, because you'd still be in costume, wouldn't you?
Well, I mean, I do say that in the show. In real life, they cut me out of the costume before I got to the hospital.
Okay.
So, right. But I did have a moment when I was, because obviously, Peter, you do know that my mum sews all my costumes still. I say it as part of the show, but it's real as well. And I do remember when they said to me, can we cut you out of this, thinking, yeah, no, that's okay, because I know we've got extra of that fabric back at home, but she can remake that one.
Oh, dear. So were you able to hold on to a belief that you would recover and that you'd be back on stage as soon as possible?
Like I said, the first week was really scary and we didn't really know. And it wasn't until I got to London, they ended up airlifting me to London the week that the Queen died. And I met the surgeon who was going to be, he basically had to reconstruct my foot. So the way he described it to me when I got to London was basically it was like a bomb had exploded in my foot, which Peter, as you can imagine, really calmed me down. So yeah, he basically, if you look at the x-ray from the night in Turkey, it almost looks like a vase has been thrown on the ground. So
wow,
how they managed to put it back together like a jigsaw is phenomenal. It was like a 5-hour surgery. And I mean, the thing with your foot is there's so many, you know, small bones, and you know, it's not like breaking your arm or your leg where it's usually one break and along we go. So yeah, once I met him, he kind of, they walked me through what would happen, and he kind of said to me, you will be able to do things again, but it's never going to be 100, it's never going to be like the other foot, and there's probably going to be complications down the track. Whether that's going to happen in 5 years or 10 years, it's kind of impossible to predict at the moment. But yeah, he kind of gave me like a 6 to 12 month recovery of being able to, you know, kind of walk again. And yeah, so there are things that I still can't do. I really want to be able to get my tap shoes back on. That's kind of my next goal, because, you know, that was part of my show. And, you know, my show kind of like, I always looked at my show as a variety show, but I'm doing all the different parts, you know? So the tapping was another part. I feel like, oh, I've lost that. I used to do the splits across two chairs at the end of the show was kind of my signature thing. I haven't been able to do that. So I do feel a little bit at the moment like, oh, you know, I'm crossing off. But of course, I know that to a lot of the audience, you know, it's still I can still put on a show. But for me personally, there are things that I wish I could do.
You put on a hell of a show, I must say. And you do still manage to tap in your own original way. I thought we won't give it away, but it's precious. There's still a tap number in the
show. Oh yes, I forgot about that. Yes.
Yeah. No, wonderful.
We work out a way. Well, you know, that's what you learn growing up in Fringe and, you know, growing up in theatre. You've always got to improvise, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's we're coming to the end of a long tour. I think you've got one more date left in Adelaide on December 2nd.
Yeah, the same night as the Foo Fighters. Can you believe it, Peter? Oh, hopefully we've got a different audience.
Well, I know who I'd rather see.
Oh, come on. Dave Grohl's going to put on a great show.
So Adelaide still have a chance to catch their hands and in his current tour finale, which is great for them.
Oh, come on. Adelaide always has a chance, you know? I'm the opposite of every major artist who always skip Adelaide. I always do Adelaide, you know? but we are adding a few more shows next year. So stay tuned, Peter, on hansofficial.com. Yes, Peter. That's hansofficial.com.
And I suppose any Adelaidean can catch you if they go down to their local Aldi store, perhaps.
Oh, I do love an Aldi. Oh, my gosh. I love the special buys. I love that centre aisle. You know, yeah, that's the Germany me coming out.
I know. You go in for a litre of milk and you come out with a lawnmower.
And why wouldn't you? You know what? The last time I went to Germany, it was on a cruise and we were there for one day. And I said to my friend, you know where we've got to go? We're here. We went to German Audi. And you know what? It's eerily similar.
When in Rome.
When in Rome, exactly.
I'm very excited also that next year you get to do an opera. One of my favourite operas, Candide.
Can you believe it? Can you believe they're putting me in an opera? Mitchell Butel. Now, listen, this is a man who knows talent. What can I say, Peter? Yes, he messaged me last year and said, so we've got an idea. How do you feel about doing an opera? And I said, count me in. What's the role? Obviously thinking it was going to be the title role. But when he told me, no, it's you're not the main star, I went, well, what's going on? He said to me that my character does die, but comes back from the dead, Peter. So I can only assume it's almost Christ-like kind of character, which got me over the line. I said, yep, that's me. I can see myself doing that.
That'll do it. Hans the Messiah.
That'll do it. Well, you know, I mean, the comparisons have been made.
Now, one last question before we say goodbye. Have you ever thought of writing an autobiography? And what do you think it might be called?
Oh, gosh. I'm more concerned about who would play me in the movie, Peter.
Any ideas?
I haven't thought of the title. Well, I think Meryl Streep, she can play anything.
She can.
She?
Yeah, she'd be a great Hans.
I think it's got to be either a toss-up between Meryl or Channing Tatum, obviously, or, you know, what's his name? Thor, or the brother, even.
One of the Hemsworths.
I don't know. Who would play Hans in the movie version? Yeah, I don't know.
It's worth pondering.
She has passed away. It is worth pondering. And I do need to think about the autobiography. In terms of the title, yes, what should I call the Hans autobiography title? Is he really German? Question mark.
There you go. I think that'll do it. Matt Gilbertson, thank you for your wonderful wisdom and insight into the world of cabaret and Hans and all thing Matt today. It's been delightful. So thank you.
Peter, I can't believe we finally made this podcast happen. Thank you so much for having me against, you know, some up-and-coming performers that you've had on this podcast. I mean, Tim Rice, who? I don't know. Thank you, Peter.
You can catch Hans and Matt on December 2nd in Adelaide for his Disco Spectacular, with other dates to come in 2024. It's a brilliant evening of cabaret and comedy. It's just the thing we need at the moment. And also, don't forget that Hans will be appearing in his first opera, Candide, being presented as part of the South Australian Theatre Company season in 2024. Thanks for joining us in this episode. It's always a delight to have your company. I'm Peter Ayers. Keep well, keep warm, stay safe, and I'll catch you next time on Stages.